amazing.
It'll be fun. Okay. So thank you all. I'm sorry for the slight delay. We had a staff meeting that ran late.
How big a staff do you have that you need?
Everybody's got to be on the same page.
Okay.
For the show, yeah. Yeah, we have a staff meeting every Monday. Anyway,
yeah,
okay.
What color are we painting? Don't laugh about that. We have the painters in the house.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Poor guy. That's why he was waiting outside for
me. That was why? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully it'll be done soon and smoothly, and you won't have to go over it again.
No.
Okay.
You know, this is a painter with a Jewish name.
Okay.
Slow-mo.
Okay.
It stands for slow motion.
That's very cute.
Spirit.
Okay. So there's there's some English photocopies of the Gemara. Okay. So I'm going to do a slight recap from last week, just because you know some people weren't here, and we'll continue a little bit further as well. So the first week we had kind of an overview about the uniqueness of the mitzvah of tzedakah, in how that it's sort of a blend of Bein Adam LaMakom and Bein Adam LaChavero, between both something between you and God, as well as some interpersonal aspect as well. Today we're going to continue discussing the first topic in the Shulchan Aruch about the halachos of tzedakah, namely the ability to force somebody to contribute, to pay tzedakah. This is known in Hebrew as kviya b'tzedakah, forcing somebody to pay tzedakah. So the way we'll work, we'll do a little bit of reverse engineering. We'll see the halachos in the Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll go back to the Gemara and try to find out where it got it from. That's kind of what we spoke about last week. And then we'll go through Tosfos. We went through the answers that Tosfos gives on this discussion superficially, so we're going to go into them more in depth. That'll be the plan for today. So if we look at the beginning, the first page in Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, I don't have these are photocopies, so I'm not able to share this right now, but we're in Resh Mem Ches, section 248 in Yoredeya. The title of the section in Shulchan Aruch is Mi Chayev Ba Umi Ro'i Lekabla. So who is obligated to give tzedakah and who is fitting to receive tzedakah? So the first part, this is one of the more important parts that we're going to focus on today, is Kol Adam Chayev Liten Tzedakah. Everybody is obligated to give tzedakah, afilu ani hamisparnes min hatzedakah. Even a poor person that is supported by communal funds is obligated to pay or to give a portion back as tzedakah. Then if we skip down to the fourth line, it says, based in kofinoso, umakinoso, makas mardus, ad sheyitain masha amduhu litain. So Bastin is able to force a person to contribute and able to hit the person, giving them what's known as makas mardus. So there's typically two types of whippings that a Bastin can give. One is the biblical one, which is 39 lashes, and that's it. That's if you transgress certain biblical prohibitions. Then, if you're just being a nudnik and not listening to Beis Din, or if you're refusing to abide by a rabbinic command, you are rebelling against Beis Din, and so then they're actually authorized to hit you as much as you need until you listen. So over here, it says they're able to give you a whipping as makas mardus, that second type, until you give what they estimate or what they assess that you're able to give. Now, just parenthetically, maybe we'll talk about this a different time. What I just said, I seem to have just contradicted myself, because what's the shear? How much are they able to whip you for makas mardus? We are authorized to hit you until you listen. But then look at the next line. V'yardin l'nechasov. They can also just go into your bank account and take it. So why do I need to whip you then? If Beis Din is authorized to just access your bank account, the moment you refuse, I shouldn't need to whip you. I should just withdraw the funds. So once again, there seems to be two aspects to this refusal. Well, what
you
do you
got to sign off on it? That's why they keep whacking you until you sign off on it.
Oh, so you're saying that they can't? So you're saying that they're not allowed? I am not allowed to.
That's why they're whacking them. So he approves it.
Right. So the question is that let's say I owe somebody money. Let's say I have, let's say there's a loan and I'm refusing to pay the loan. Basin can hit me, but they can also just seize my assets. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but what you're saying right now is that the tzedakah is different than a loan, which is okay. I'm just saying that's what you're saying right now. That a loan is a financial obligation that I have to give to somebody. Tzedakah may look like that, but it's not. Tzedakah is an obligation that I have.
It's a verbal obligation to give to somebody. That's it.
Oh, so it's a verbal obligation. Okay, so what they're forcing me on is not my financial debt. They're forcing me into compliance with the mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. And that might actually, this next word might support what you're saying, Gabe. The next word is bifanav. That they can only go into your bank account when you're there. Meaning if you skip town, they can't unilaterally withdraw funds. Now, this is a machlokes. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that it has to be bifanav, he has to be present. Some say that you don't even have to be present. So if you don't have to be present, then it may seem those opinions might see tzedakah as more as a loan. If you have to be there and you basically have to sign off on it under gunpoint, so then it might be more of a mitzvah. So I'm just saying, like, you have both sides. The Shulchan Aruch, like you said, Gabe, seems to intimate that it's more of a mitzvah than a loan. Others will see at some point will disagree.
You're making the assumption here.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is a place where people listen to Besdin.
Correct. Yeah, obviously, it's if they're not gonna listen, then there's not much force that they can do.
No, if you've got in the United States, a very good example of it, but anything in the post-mercantile period.
Okay. Yeah. So again, we are working under the assumption that Beis Din has authority. If they don't, then there's not much we can do. So now turn the page. We'll do Sif Beis and part of Sif Gimel. So Shulchan Aruch continues. Mimashkin al hatzdaka. We can even take collateral for people to pay their tzedakah dues. Afilu be'erev Shabbos, even on Erev Shabbos, a day when everybody's rushing and the guy can claim I need more time, we don't care. Now, here's where it gets a little bit interesting. Sif Gimel, Yusomim, orphans that have like a trust fund, Ein poskin alehem tzedaka, afilu lepidyon shvuyin, afilu yesh lehem mamon harbe. So even if these orphans, they're minors, so even if they have this massive trust fund, we do not take any money from them, even for the biggest, you know, mitzvah there is of redeeming captives, even if they have a ton of money, ella imkein, unless poskin alehem lekavod. Unless we think that, having a mention in the bulletin or a donor plaque or getting, you know, honored, that will help them in the long run. That's sort of the balance that we strike. And then there's another part, I'm not going to go into it just because it's worded very, very long in the Ramah, but the other exception is if there's another reason why they'll be better off now than later. So an example is, let's say they have a loan to a non-Jew where there's interest. So if you don't let them pay up, it'll cost them more. Or another example with Jews is, let's say their mother died and their father remarried somebody. So based on the halachos of Yerusha, until the woman gets her ksuba, the orphan's estate has to pay for her. So in the long run, it's cheaper for her to just collect her ksuba now, even though you're withdrawing a larger amount of funds in the short term from the estate. So the halach is because in the long run it's cheaper that way, based in authorized to withdraw the funds immediately.
No,
even if there is an apotropos. Even if there is a caretaker over the estate, the apotropos is not allowed and he is not even required to settle any outstanding loans unless it's better in the long run for them until they're adults. Even if there is an apotropos. So the question is, where do we, if you put all of these halachos together, I'm sorry?
No.
So if you put all of these halachos together, what you get is that Beis Din is authorized to basically withdraw funds from people. They have to sign off on it pro forma. However, they don't force everybody. Yesomim, orphans, don't have to be forced to do it. So if it's a mitzvah, so maybe that makes sense. Why orphans don't have to be forced because they're minors. So minors don't have to perform mitzvahs, which seems to go against what we just said. Meaning we said that the reason why I have to get you to sign off on tzedakah is because... Oh, no, sorry. No, this supports what it says. I'm sorry. The reason why we have to force the people to sign off on it is because it's a mitzvah and it's not a debt. So that's why orphans don't have to. That's why orphans don't have to, because they're not obligated in mitzvos. So already we see that tzedakah is more of a mitzvah than a financial obligation. We'll see, though, there are others that disagree with that. So now let's look at the Gemara. So if you turn the page, I first have Daf Ches from Bava Basra in the Hebrew, and then I have the Art Scroll translations. So if you're following in the Hebrew, it is on the bottom of Ches Amed Aleph, it is... the 6 lines from the bottom. It starts with Va'amar of Asi, Amar of Yochanan. If you want to, if you want to look in the English, where would that be? It's the second page of the English on the right side, halfway through. Second page of the English, half on the right side. So, Va'amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Asi said in the name of Rav Yochanan. So, right now, what we've been talking about in the Gemara are basically community taxes that you have to pay for. Mm-hmm. So, communities have security. You know, they have walls, they have security guards, they have arms, they have a militia. They also have public goods. They have, you know, sewer systems, roads, and then they also have tzedakah. They had two types of tzedakah. One was known as a kupa, which was a box of money that people could come. And then the other was a tamchoy, which was a plate of food that even more acutely indigent people could just come in and get a meal for the day. It's like a soup kitchen. So the Mishnah was talking about how long do you have to live in a city to essentially be forced to contribute to these taxes. So the Mishnah says either 30 days or 12 months, depending on what it is. So then... the Gemara lists some exceptions. So, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Hakol lepasei ha'ir. Everybody's got to contribute to the boards of the city walls for protection. Va'afilu miyasmi, even from Yisomim, even from orphans. Avo Rabbanan lo, but rabbis, Talmidei Chachamim, don't need to contribute to that. Why? De Rabbanan lo tzrichi netirusa, because rabbis don't need security. The Torah protects them. That's what the Gemara says.
You heard that one.
So again,
when was this written?
I don't, you know, probably in the 400s, 500s. I don't know.
About
2023. Yeah. Well. So apparently, at least in the times of the Gemara, Chazal felt that rabbis don't need protection.
Rabbis don't pay taxes.
So no, it doesn't say the rabbis don't pay taxes, or at least they should be paying taxes, but it's selective taxes. They only need to pay for certain things. They do not need to pay for any security stuff. And then Amar Rav Papa, Leshura, Leparsha, Letarzina, Afilu Miyasmi, Avo Rabbanan Lo, Lo Trichin Etirusa. So again, other examples of defense things. So walls and arms, security guards, you don't need to pay for that stuff. Klala de milsa, so what's the rule? Kol milsa de is lehu hana amine, anything that you have, that you benefit from, afilu miyasme, even orphans have to contribute to. So what does that sound like then? So that sounds like that the philosophy of taxes in the eyes of Chazal were anything that you, by definition, can benefit from, then you have to pay for it, even if you don't end up benefiting from it. But if definitionally you don't need this, then you don't need to contribute. So that's sort of the rule that we establish about taxes. And then it tells a story.
That it's the rabbis that are exempt, that are writing the
rules. Yeah, we do have a little bit of self-interest when we legislated this, but that's essentially, that's the Chazal's taxation philosophy. Rabba Ramatstaka Ayasme. So Rabba levied taxes, but not I mistranslated. He levied tzedakah on Yesomim, Devei Bar Merion, from the family of Bar Merion, which was a wealthy family. Amar Le Abaye Vahatani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Ein Poskin Tzedaka Al Hayesomim Afilu LePidyon Shvuyin. We just Abaye said we don't have them give tzedakah for anything. Amar Le Anol Achshavinu Kaavdina. No, I am doing it for their benefit because they'll get praised for it and it'll build up their esteem in the eyes of the people. They're from a chashav, a family, so we want that legacy to continue in the eyes of the public.
So if you have money, you're always going to be on top of the heap.
That's what it sounds like. That this was a chashav, a family, and so they wanted to maintain that public image for the benefit of the next generation of kids, and so they still gave their annual donation, even though they were minors. That's basically what the story is saying.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember learning the Gemara many, many, many years ago.
Okay.
And I did many years ago. But
okay, don't bother. Don't tell us
how old you are. Just keep talking.
No, but the question of taxes.
Yeah.
By itself, that was. Besdin meets, or if they control the town, and tax the Jewish population.
Okay.
For what purpose?
Security.
Well, no, that's the question. I mean.
No, what you don't know, it's the public good. Whatever the public good be, I don't know. Okay? But it's the public good. But the Besdin decides how much.
Right. Yeah, so Besdin comes up with the tax brackets. We'll see that in greater detail. But basically, Besdin is authorized, and it doesn't even have to be Besdin. I was going to say this later. I could say it now. So Rav Schechter published a piece about modern taxes and why we're obligated to pay modern taxes. It's in English. It's one of the few English articles that he's written. I can share it with you. Actually, a former assistant rabbi here, Trent, was the one that wrote it in English for him, Rabbi Moshe Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to find the article. I can send it to you. It was published in the RJJ Journal a few decades ago. So there's two basically classic models of taxes. So the first is dina de malchus dina, that the law of the land, especially when it comes to government. Rav Schechter believes, though, that nowadays, with an elected system of government, the president may not be a king. The president, some say that the president has the status of a king because he can pardon people, but the president probably does not have the halachic status of a melech. Instead, though, he says, what is this? It's a shutfus. Elected government is a partnership. Just like you can have a partnership in business, you can have a partnership in elected government. And he said what that basically is akin to is the way that Jewish communities were structured in the times of the Gemara. In the times of the Gemara, you had what were known as Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, the seven elders or leaders of the city. It was essentially a town council. And even though they weren't part of a court, even though they weren't part of the Beis Din, they had executive authority. Right. It wasn't that they were kings. They couldn't put people to death. But because the public somehow decided these are going to be our leaders, so that's a partnership, and you have to contribute to a partnership. So Rav Schechter says that's exactly why we have to pay taxes. I don't pay taxes because, because the king says I have to pay taxes. It's because I entered into a partnership by living in America. In exchange for those taxes, I get goods and services. So, or we like to think that we do, depending on who you talk to. But that's essentially what this is. That's essentially what this is. That if you want to live in this town, everybody that lives in this town has to contribute for things. So some of those things are protection. And so for rabbis that don't benefit from that, they don't need to contribute for that, but they have to contribute for, sewage, for construction. They have to pay for that stuff.
Yeah.
Paying for, we'll see this maybe later, paying for a mikvah, paying for a shul, paying for schools. You have to contribute for that. Paying for tzedakah. That's listed here as one of the things that you need to contribute for. In addition to contributing for security, you have to contribute to the soup kitchen. You have to contribute to the Chesed Fund. That's basically what we're talking about here. So there's one more part of the Gemara, though, that I want to share with you, which is the next page, Ches Amid Beis. And so in the English, that is by the Tanu Rabbanan. So it's the third page in the English, on the bottom half right column, Tanu Rabbanan. So it's like the last paragraph on the third English page. So Tanu Rabbanan, Kupa Shel Tzedakah. So this is a new sugya. This is a new topic which talks about the distribution of tzedakah. Kupa Shel Tzedakah, Nigvis B'Shnayim U'Mischalekes B'Shlosha. So tzedakah for the Chesed Fund is collected by Gaboyim. It has to have two Gaboyim at least, and is divided by at least three Gaboyim.
We have a problem. Because I'm the only one who walks around with this tzedakah.
Yeah, so that'll hopefully be the next topic. This is more of a segue, but just keep this in mind. Nigvis b'shnayim, the reason why it has to be collected with two people, she'ein osin sraros al hatzibur pachos mishnayim, because we do not have any positions of authority that are less than one. That are less than two. You need to share power. What is defined as a position of authority? It typically is understood as somebody that has the power to make executive financial decisions over an entity.
There's another reason for this. Not mentioned here, but it's clear.
Okay.
Why do you need more than one person?
Why?
So the other one doesn't steal.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. No, I wasn't giving the reason. I was just giving the definition. You know, it's to prevent abuse of power. Exactly. Umischalekes bishlosha, and it's divided by three people. Kidine mamenos. So, like all financial reasons. So, what is that? So, right. So, you're saying that three people is a beis din. The minimum amount of people to paskin a monetary shaila is three people. So, what does that mean when we say that to give out tzedakah you need a beis din? What does that sound like then? What is tzedakah? It's not a mitzvah per se, but it's a financial award. It's almost like a choshen mishpat court case. So it's not the forcing the collection, that's a mitzvah. The divvying up is actually a psak of based in saying you need that much, you need that much, you need that much. That assessment is a psak, and so that needs three people. Kidine maminos. Okay, so now we go to the second tzedakah type, tamchui, the plate, the soup kitchen. Nigvis bishlosha, umischalekes bishlosha. So that needs to be both collected and distributed by three. Why? Shegvuya v'chaluka shavim. Because its collection and its distribution is identical, which is a bit of a strange, a concept. I'm curious, how does Art Scroll translate that? I want to see how they do it. They cut it off here? Nah. Okay, so I'm sorry. Okay, so the way I would explain it, and again, some people might disagree. If you look at Rashi, so if you go to the Hebrew side, it's the third line, Shagaveh v'chalukeh shaveh, that its collection and distribution was equal. It says, Rashi says, b'chol yom midei yom biyom, it was done every day, k'dekatani lekameh, as we'll see later on, l'fichach, and therefore, ein gvuyav b'shnayim, we don't collect it with two people, shelo yitztarchu litroach, Ulevakes es hashlishi lechalek. It was purely pragmatic. Don't think that this is a problem with our, division between collection and distribution. That collection is a mitzvah and distribution is a psak. The same thing is true with the tamchoi, with the soup kitchen. But the reason why we need three is just for efficiency's sake, because we need three to distribute. So we might as well just get the third guy to go on the collection route too. It's easier that way, because otherwise we're not going to find somebody that has free time. So that's what the Gemara.
Why does that only apply to the tamchoi?
So as we'll see, in the next section, the tamchoi was collected every day, as opposed to the chesed fund was not. So for the chesed fund, okay, so once a week or however frequently it happens, so you bully a guy into doing it with you. But the tamchoi, that was like almost a full time operation. They did that every day.
Because I guess the people really needed the food.
Yeah, and food spoils also. Yeah, so yeah. Exactly.
They didn't have refrigeration.
Right. So the Gemara continues. Tamchoi nigve tamchoi b'chol yom. The tamchoi was done every day. And kupa me'erev Shabbos, l'erev Shabbos. And the kupa was done basically once a week on Fridays. Tamchui la'aniyei olam, the plate was done for anybody, and kupa la'aniyei ha'ir. But the chesed fund was reserved for people in the town. Then it talks about switching tzedakah funds, which I don't want to get into now because that elicited a whole lot of comments last time. We'll do that. It's a different sugya. We'll do that later. let's go down. So let's go down to the second to last skinny line. So in the English, that is... So it's on the second to last English page. It's on the bottom, so it's like the very last paragraph. My Sararusa. So what is this authority that people have to collect tzedakah? So the Gemara says, so that Sararus, Amar of Nachman, Amar Rabba, Baravua, Lefisha, Mimashkinin al Hatzdaka, because the authority is I can just seize your stuff as a collateral. Va'afilu be'erev Shabbos, even on Erev Shabbos. So now the Gemara asks a question. Inis, can you really do that? Va'aksiv, but there's a pasuk that says, Ufakadati al kol lo chatzav. God is going to take revenge on all those that oppress his people. Va'amar of Yitzchak bar Shmuel, bar Marta, and Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel, the son of Martha, said, Mishmei derav, in the name of Rav, Va'afilu al gabay tzedakah. God's even going to punish the gabay tzedakah that bully people. So how could they take things without asking? So lo kasha, it's not a problem. Ha de amid, ha de lo amid. So there's a difference between when it's been assessed that you can contribute more than when they just unilaterally just descend and take stuff from you. And then we give a story. Ki ha de rava, achpe le rav nasan bar ami, vishakil mine, arba mea zuze litzdaka. So Rava went to Rav Nasan Barami and took 400 zuz, which we calculated last week is basically the minimum a 2-year salary for a low class worker, an exorbitant amount of money. Mm-hmm. So how could he do that? Apparently, it's because they assessed that he is able to give more. He could have contributed more, and he didn't. So they were allowed to take more. So. If we stopped here, so this is the sugya that I wanted to do with you. So if you had to pick where from this sugya do we know that I can force people to contribute tzedakah, where would you bring it from? The end. Okay. Yeah, so the end is pretty clear. The end, I think, is a good source. Turn back to the first page, and we'll look where the Vilna Gaon as well as the Beis Yosef, they both say the same thing. The Bir Hagra, it's right below the text of the Shulchan Aruch, on the right column, it says, based in Kofin, based in Kenforce. So the Vilna Gaon quotes, Harif v'harash, both the Rif and the Rush is the source for this psak. Amashakosav b'bava basra ches amid aleph. Based on what the Gemara says on ches amid aleph, the first part of the sugya, upasa yo'ir t'nan b'masnisin sham de Kofin. When we list all the other things... that people have to contribute to, one of the things is tzedakah. And then he says, Visham on Amud Beis, ki hadarava. We also have the story of Rava, where he forced Rav Nasan to pay up a two-year salary. So the Vilna Gaon, and again, he's not the only one that says this, the Beis Yosef, we'll see in a second, he also has this idea. There's actually two sources from our Gemara. The first is, well, I think, what's pretty obvious to everybody, the ending of our Gemara, that story of the seizure of assets. But he also says there's also that first part. There's also the first part of the all those public goods. And so the question is, why do I need both sources? And in fact, the Rif and the Rush only mention the first one. If you go past the Gemaras, this is the Beis Yosef. Past all the, it's the third to last page in the booklet. So the left column in the Beis Yosef, he quote the Rif and the Rush, who say, based on our Gemara on Chesamid Aleph, Shaminan, Dechol Hani Mili Chiyuva. We learn from that first part of the Gemara that lists all those public goods that they're all obligations, Umafkinan Mine, and we can take from them. Forcibly, dumya de passe ha'ir, just like security stuff. So they don't mention the second part. The Beis Yosef then adds, oh, by the way, the Garcin and Ocham, we also see later on that story of Rava forcing Rav Nassim to pay up. So the question is, why do I need both? What are each contributing here? Is there a difference? Maybe there's not. Maybe the Gemara is, you know, maybe the Vilna Gaon just felt like, you know, listing two sources. Could be. But are they different? Are they contributing anything different to the story? So what could be a difference between the two? So how many people are in the first story, are in the second story? There's only one. Mm-hmm. There's one taker, Rava. Rava just says, I'm taking. How many people do you need to collect tzedakah?
Two.
We said two.
And you need three to give it out.
And you need three to give it out. That's not what happened here. So maybe there's actually something else going on here, that this wasn't a standard collection. I don't know. But it seems like that there's two different aspects to tzedakah, possibly. One is what we would call the public good, or the public service tzedakah, of the, you know, taxes, basically. And the other is, no, this is beyond taxes. This is just like, look, there's this acute need, and I, as a representative of the of Beis Din, have decided that you need to give this amount of money.
Well, that's, yeah.
What?
I mean, that works.
That could work. I don't know. Maybe. But there seems to be, there may be some difference. So before we get to analyzing all the differences, go back to the Gemara on Ches Amid Beis. There's a Tosfos. So this Tosfos is... comes up in a number of places, and there's actually some differences between them. If you go to the second Gemara page, Ches Amid Beis, so this is where we left off last year when we went through. Tosfos has a question, and there's like nine answers to his question. He gives a few, and then other people have given others. So, Ach Fele Rav Nassan. So the story is Rava forced Rav Nassan. So, V'im Tomar, Tosfos asks, V'habaperek kol habasar. We learned in a perek in Chulin, Omar, we said, kol mitzvahs asay, any positive mitzvah, shematan schara ksuva bitzida, whose reward is listed in the Torah, ain based in shalmata, the, you know, temporal based in, is not muzharin aleha. Is not, now I'm going to be careful how I translate this because there's going to be different ways to translate this. But muzhar literally means warned. So Beis Din is not sort of obligated to force you to comply with those mitzvos. V'gabei tztaka, and by tztaka ksiv, ki pasoach tiftach es yadcha, right? There's that positive mitzvah that we saw the first week, that you got to open your hand. Uksiv, ki biglal hadavar hazeh yivarechacha. And then it says afterwards, it's for that reason that God blessed you. So Tosfos asks a question, that we have a rule. Now, the way Tosfos understands this rule is that Beis Din cannot enforce a mitzvah that's a positive mitzvah whose reward is listed in the Torah. And he believes that tzedakah fits that bill. Tzedakah has a positive mitzvah, according to some. The opinion of the Gaonim does not hold that there's actually any positive mitzvah of tzedakah. It's just a negative mitzvah. We'll get to that. But Tosfos believes that there's a positive mitzvah. And there's also a reward that's stated in the Torah that God will bless you with wealth. Maybe if we have time this week or next week, we'll actually look in the Psukim to see if Tosfos read those Psukim correctly. But that's what Tosfos, that's Tosfos's...
We're going to judge Tosfos, okay.
It's not going to be just you. We're going to have other people that judge Tosfos for that. But that's why Tosfos works himself into a corner and says, so what do we do? So now we have Omer Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam gives two answers. So Rabbeinu Tam, one of the first Balei Tosfos, Rashi's grandson, he says, Dahai Kfiya Bidvarim. This kfiya that we're talking about, this forcing that we're talking about, is not physical force, it's verbal force. And then he gives a couple of examples about that. So kfiya doesn't mean that I'm, you know, whipping you. Rather, what it means, meaning Tosfos disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. So Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, you can't hit the guy. You could, you know, shame him. You could nag him. You can bully him verbally. You know, as somebody said last week, you give them an offer they can't refuse with words, but you can't hit them. Then he gives another answer. The od tirates dehacha kiblu aleihem sheyecholfu osan hagabai. The next answer is that they accepted on themselves that the gabai can force them. So, what does that mean? So this in the second answer, he says they actually can hit you. They can seize your assets. They could do whatever you want.
The gabai would say, show no respect for you. You get no liyas, no nothing in the community until you give in your tzedakah. Nothing will happen until you give in your
tzedakah. Right. So that could be that I think is more in line with the first one.
Correct.
Meaning that's just
no
verbal pressure. There's no physical pressure. Right. The second is no. Actually, there can be physical pressure, but sort of everybody sort of signed off on it beforehand, which is a very weird thing to say. And if you look the where is it? If you turn to the second to last page, so Rav Moshe Feinstein published Svarim, some in his lifetime, some posthumously, on various Masechtas that he gave shiur on. It's divided up. It's called Dibros Moshe. It's divided up into two sections. The first are his long shiurim, which are like 20 pages. And then he has, at the end of every chapter, he has ha'aros, which are like one paragraph long, that are just like short notes on a subject. So this comes from the notes section. So he says, this is the top thing on the second to last page, v'ta'am tiritz sheni de Rabbeinu Tam. So this second answer of Rabbeinu Tam, de kiblu aleihem sheyichofu osan, that they accepted on themselves that they could force them, nira b'tam shemoil. He says, I have to try to explain, like, how does this work? You can't, you just force people to hit you? Like, what does that even mean? V'ein yochol achzor b'hem, and they can't just say, no, I'm like, I don't want you to hit me anymore, like, change my mind. Like, if you agree to something, theoretically, you can back out. There's no money changed hands. V'af be'etzem kabbalah kazu, and even just accepting something on this, tzarech leida eich shayich zeh. You have to understand, like, what does that even mean? Like, how does that work? So tzarech lomar, so Rav Moshe says, shehu me'inyan kabbalas mitzvah, shena'asis b'din neder. So Rav Moshe falls back on tzedakah is not just a chesed, it's not just a kindness, and it's not a financial obligation. It's a vow that you take on yourself. So we'll see that in the later halachos, there's a lot of overlap between the halachos of a neder and the halachos of tzedakah. Rav Moshe says the reason why the gabai has teeth here, if you accept something on yourself, is because it is a neder. That's what Rav Moshe says. You look like you have strong thoughts about that.
I don't have strong thoughts about anything. When Rav Moshe is making the assumption,
yeah,
that whatever Beis Din says is it, and it, whatever they say, you owe X amount to these.
Yeah, so
it becomes a netter to you, and that's not the way it works.
Yeah. So okay. So you're working under the assumption that this is that there was no formal acceptance over here. This is just based in. It seems like Rav Moshe's understanding tells us that no, there was almost a document that was signed of basically people saying, like, a waiver saying I authorize based in to hit me if they need to, which again is like a little bit weird.
Who would have done that?
Right. So now if you look in if you look in the next section, the next source, so this is a different Baal Tosfos. So I'm still trying to figure out every Masechta of that has Tosfos was not written by the same person. So the way Tosfos were published in the Gemara is that it was published at various points in history, and especially in the first printing in like the 1500s. So they looked at whatever notes they had from Tosfos and manuscripts on each Masechta, and whichever source was the most robust, they used that. But there were different schools of Tosfos, and so oftentimes some Tosfos disagreed with others, and you could have them in different Masechtas talking about the same topic and saying completely different things.
Right.
So I don't remember who is the author of the Tosfos for Bava Basra, Rav Ephraim Orbach, the professor Ephraim Orbach, from Hebrew University like 50 years ago. So he made a book where he talked about who is the author of each Masechta of their Tosfos. The other thing to keep in mind about Tosfos is that the ones we have in the Gemara are probably the worst ones that exist because they're like a hodgepodge of various sources. Or they're like half Tosfos in. So if you learn a Masechta that has like Tosfos Harash or Tosfos Harid, or what we'll see now, the Tosfos Rashba, this is essentially attributed to one specific Baal HaTosfos. It's much clearer, and there actually may be some differences as well. So this is Tosfos Rashba on Ksubas. So Tosfos and Ksubas says the same, has the same question. He gives a slightly different second answer, but the reason why I showed you the Tosfos Rashba is because he fleshes it out a lot more historically. So the Rashba is not the Rashba in those blue books that Masada Rav Kook publishes. Different Rashba. This guy's name is Rav Shimshon ben Avraham of Sens, known as the Rash. He was one of the great students of Rabbeinu Tam. So if you look over here, Achfei Rav Aler of Ami, Yesh Makshin, some ask, Heich kafa oso bishvil tzedakah? How could you force them to give tzedakah? V'matan schara b'tzida? We know that it says the reward afterwards. D'kidichsiv l'man yivarechach Hashem alakecha, that God will bless you. V'amrinan, and we say b'perek alabasar, we say in chulin, d'chol mitzvah saseh shematan schara b'tzida, ein based in shalmatu muzharan aleha. The basin does not enforce it. V'zimnin amar Rabbeinu Tam. Sometimes Rabbeinu Tam would say, Dahai achfei bedvarim, that it means that they forced you with words. V'zimnin, Omer, and sometimes he would say, Shebeiro shel Rava, that in Rava's town, Hayugaboin shekotzvu beinehem, loseis kach v'kach l'chodesh o l'shana. That it wasn't that they signed up to be forced to give tzedakah. It wasn't like they signed a blank check. It was that they pledged certain amounts. V'hilkach kafye, and therefore they forced him. Kidamrinan, as we'll see later on in the Gemara, ein reshan lasi al kitzasan, that Beis Din is not authorized to change the terms of a pledge. So right. So this. It's different than Artosus and Bava Basra. It's clearly, this makes a lot more sense. And it answers Rav Moshe's question in a lot of a better way. Rav Moshe says, oh, it's a mitzvah, it's a neder that people give. There's nothing to do here with a neder. There's nothing to do here with the mitzvah. What is it? You basically pledged a certain amount of money, and Beis Din is coming to collect. So the Kabbalah, the acceptance, was not on the act of charity. It's that I literally pledged an amount, and it's like I owe it to people. So
that makes it a neder.
Isn't that sort of a neder?
So it's a neder, but like it's even stronger than a neder, meaning the enforceability is not a iser veheter or yoredeya. It's a choshen mishpat. It's like I basically signed a check to Beis Din saying I'm committing to giving this. And so Beis Din's like, okay, you committed to giving this. You owe us this money now. We're coming to collect. So over here, you have more of the choshen mishpat end of things as opposed to the mitzvah yoredeya neder aspect. So that is what I would say the second answer of Rabbeinu Tam is. Second answer of Rabbeinu Tam is that you pledged the money, so they're coming to collect. Now we can understand why we needed this story, meaning that in general, that first part of the Gemara that just says public goods. Okay, so Beis Din can assess what everybody's got to give. This was not an assessment from Beis Din. This was a pledge. This is a totally different case. So now how do I know that Beis Din is authorized to do different, to collect different things? Well, part of it I know is because from the first part of the story, that it's a taxable good, you know, it's taxable. The other is that there are pledges, and both of those are authorized by Beis Din to collect. So that's what I would say the second answer of Rabbeinu Tam is. Let's go back to the first part. The first part of Rabbeinu, so it sounds like that Rabbeinu Tam would vacillate between the two answers, meaning the Tosfos Rashba could have said that at one point Rabbeinu Tam said this, and then he changed his mind. Here it sounds like that sometimes he would say this, and sometimes he would say that. Sounds like he would go back and forth between the two answers. Like he couldn't decide, meaning there were pros and cons to each of them. So you know, we're learning be'in, we're learning in depth. So Rabbeinu Tam couldn't decide between two answers. So what are the pros and cons of each answer? So the first answer is that it was just verbal abuse. And the second answer is that it was a pledge. So what are the benefits of saying the second answer, that it was a pledge?
The man is admitting that that's what he owes, no? I mean,
right, so A, the mechanism seems a lot clearer. And the second is, in the text, it works a lot better. If you look in the next section, the Shita Mekubetzes, he quotes a gloss to the Tosfos that he had, and it says, Letiritz Rabbeinu Tam Kama, according to Rabbeinu Tam's first answer, Kasha, it's very difficult. It should be Dalet. Demaisi Hacha, Memashkinin Al Hakupa. Right, the very words that precede is that I could take a collateral. Mashma to kofin mamish. It sounds like that they can actually take. So, and then he says also maybe it means that they're authorized to take a mashko, maybe that also means it has, it's only verbal, that they can basically force, they can verbally convince you to give them a mashkon. You know, like basically like somebody just like hacking you on the phone until you give a verbal commitment. Yeah, exactly. I don't do that either.
This is the classic answer where the question is better than the answer.
Exactly. So that's why Rabbeinu Tam needed the second answer. So that's one reason why Rabbeinu Tam would like to give the, oh, I signed the form answer, right, that I'm committing to giving this amount of money every so often. Now, why would Rabbeinu Tam go back to the first answer, though? What's difficult about that second answer?
Make sure that
right, and the Gemara never said that. Right, that's a huge, we call that ukimta in the Gemara, that you're making a case in the Gemara that doesn't exist there. You're adding this premise, which it doesn't sound like here at all. It just sounds like that Beis Din is authorized to collect. No one said that there was any commitment involved. And in fact, if you make it about a prior commitment, then there's really no chiddush. There's no reason for the Gemara to say, oh, if you owe money to Beis Din can collect. We know that. So that's why Rabbeinu Tam would go back and forth between the two answers, because either way, you kind of run into difficulties. Either way, it's a little bit hard to deal with. We don't have so much time left, so I just want to go through one more answer here. And with that, we'll end. This next answer is the Re. If you go back to Tosfos on Ches Amid Beis, halfway through the Tosfos, so we're up to the first word on the line is O son. So the Re gives a totally different answer. The Re says, Uleri nire debitzdaka kofin mishum de ispahu lav. That there's another reason why we can force you, is because in addition to the positive mitzvah, there's also a negative mitzvah. D'chsiv ba lo sa'ameitz es levavcha v'lo sa'kpotz es yadcha. So in addition to the positive mitzvah, there's also a negative mitzvah. The negative mitzvah says, don't close your heart, don't close your hand. So why does a negative mitzvah change the dynamic? Because Beis Din has an obligation to make sure that nobody violates halacha. Not doing a mitzvah saseh, not doing a positive mitzvah, okay, there might be a difference. But a negative mitzvah, Beis Din is obligated to police people about. So that's what the Re answer is. So now the question is...
Is it really a lav?
So now the question is, so Rabbeinu Tam also had this pasuk in the Torah, so how does he answer? So why didn't he say that? So one answer is like what you're saying, is that, well, it's not a mitzvah lo saseh. Maybe it's not a negative mitzvah. Maybe that's just, you know, something the Torah says.
It's advice.
It's advice. Okay, so it's basically, it's giving you mussar. So that could be. So it could be that Rabbeinu Tam doesn't hold that it's a mitzvah. And we'll go into various, I'll show you next week, different Rishonim who have different counts of the mitzvah of tzedakah. So it could be that Rabbeinu Tam doesn't hold that it's a negative mitzvah. Another answer, and this is suggested in the name of Rav Elchanan Wasserman, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich, who was murdered in World War II. So he gives an answer based on a Ramban, who says that there are some mitzvahs lo saseh, there are some negative mitzvahs which aren't really mitzvahs unto themselves, but rather they're just almost a restatement of the positive mitzvah, just to give it more teeth. And so that doesn't count as an independent negative mitzvah. The example that he gives is very interesting, is about ma'aka, building a fence around your house that says you should build a fence, and therefore, and you shouldn't have any blood on your hands if chas v'shalom something happens. So we don't want it to be on your head that you were responsible for this person's injury or death. So for various reasons, the Ramban ends up saying that we don't really count that as a negative mitzvah, because it's mainly just to give strength to the positive one, meaning it's not really adding anything. It's just giving you chizuk, basically saying, do this because I don't want this to happen. So Tosfos, so the Rabbeinu Tam could say, this is the same thing here, closing your heart, closing your hand. That's not adding anything new. That's just saying that it's giving you chizuk, like what you said. You're supposed to give, and I don't want you to have a closed heart and a closed hand. So, okay, that could work. That could also work. So the Re disagrees with that. So it could be that the Re believes that maybe the negative mitzvah actually does contribute something new. So what could this, and with this we'll end, what could the negative mitzvah be contributing that's not in the positive mitzvah? Look at the words that Tosfos quotes. Lo sa'ameitz es levavcha velo sikpots es yadcha. So are those, which of those words is an addition or is adding a new dimension to pasoach tichtach of opening your hand?
Sa'ameitz.
Lo sa'ameitz what?
Es levavcha.
It's adding the heart component. Mm-hmm. So you could say, okay, it's just giving me chizuk and musar. Or you could say that no, that the attitude is really important. We said in the first shir that the Ramban actually counts that as a separate mitzvah losaseh, because we care about, you have to do it besimcha. You have to give tzedakah with happiness. And in fact, his Talmud, his student, Rabbeinu Bechaye, says that you have to give tzedakah lishma. In order to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah, you have to give it with the intention of giving actual tzedakah, and if not, and this has ramifications and seems to have a little bit of a difficulty with a Gemara that says that if you drop a coin and a poor person picks it up, you fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Gemara seems to say yes, which is a bit of a problem. Rabbeinu Bechaye says in that scenario, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah because you didn't have the right intention. Uh-huh. So it could be that the Re holds that this mitzvah, maybe he doesn't go as far as Rabbeinu Bechaye to require lishma, but the lo sase is adding the emotional component, while the positive mitzvah merely just has the physical component. So that could also be the distinction between Rabbeinu Tam and the Re about whether you think the negative mitzvah is adding a new emotional dimension to tzedakah or not. Okay, as we see, there's more of Tosfos, there's more answers, and we never actually saw Tosfos' primary source, that Gemara in Chulin, about this statement about based in being based in enforcing positive mitzvah. So next time, hopefully, we'll do that as well. But thank you all for coming.